what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I thought, what would be better than to use my 34 years in the veterinary industry than to help you guys, the pet owner? What are your questions? What do you need to know? What would you like to know? I want to create a completely interactive podcast where you, the listener, can ask your questions and we will answer them. I will have industry-leading professionals come in and have conversations about your very questions. What keeps you up at night? What worries you about your pet? What worries you about the cost of taking care of your animal? There's so many things that we can talk about, but I need you to tell me what we need to come up with. Because if you do that, we can have a great, great, great session.
Crazy. Yeah. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Irreplaceable Tales. I am here with Dr. G as usual, and today we have our special guest, Dr. Hawkins. G, I will let you introduce Dr. Hawkins.
Dr. Hawk. Isn't
the
that
hawk.
The hawk? We are very blessed today because not only is she a UC Davis grad from 2000, like I'm an Illinois grad from 2000, so we got 50 years just sitting here at the table of veterinary experience. She's also done shelter medicine.
Yep.
She's the executive director of the Southern California Veterinary Medical Association. And now she's also the president of the California Veterinary Medical Association. So she has a lot more titles than I would ever have. Yeah, you've really signed up for a lot of stuff.
I sort of drank the Kool-Aid on association work. Yeah.
So today, Mallory, what do you have for us?
Today we are going to dive into a little bit of shelter medicine, emergency preparedness, and some pet insurance questions. And again, we just like to remind you guys that while we love discussing animal health and pet care, this podcast represents just their opinions, and we're not trying to diagnose, treat, or provide medical advice for your specific pets. A question that we got a lot about with shelter med is, what medical issues are most common in shelter pets, or what do you see the most of in shelter pets, and what should adopters be looking out for?
Great question. I would say probably one of the most common medical conditions shelter pets leave the shelter with potentially are upper respiratory infections, both dogs and cats. And that's simply a result of, it's typically a product of the stress that they've been under while in shelter, usually resolves shortly on its own once they get into a more stable environment. But I would always recommend, regardless of the apparent health of the animal you adopt, that you schedule that appointment with your veterinarian shortly thereafter, just for a general well check. And if there's any care that is needed for upper respiratory or any other thing at that time, it could be delivered.
We would see it pretty frequently.
Well, we wouldn't see it a lot out of your shelter, but we would see it out of other shelters. I mean, it depends how the shelters run.
Yeah.
I mean, the kennel cough is what people know it as in dogs. In cats, it's upper respiratory. There's like two viruses and a bacteria that can cause it. And unfortunately, no matter how hard you try, it's so infectious that it's hard for it to not
spread.
It's
like when you have a kid in daycare. They're just gonna pick up what the others have.
Right.
And it's just what happens.
Exactly. So in order to get kennel cough, it's a disease of being in the right place at the right time. So if they bark a lot, if they're under stress, if they have allergies happening, they have the inflammation already in the back of their throat in that area, and that allows the bacteria Bordetella to grow. So Bordetella vaccine, just so everyone knows, does not mean your dog needs to go bored, so we need to get a Bordetella. It is a actual bacteria that causes kennel cough, and it's only one of the multiple things that cause kennel cough. One of the things that people don't know is that coronavirus, but not COVID, is another cause.
Yeah, I think people always think, well, my dog got a Bordetella, so why is he getting kennel cough? Like you said, Bordetella is one of what, like 10 of the actual reasons, or one of the 10 actual bacteria that can cause kennel cough.
It's been a while. I could try to go down them, but that's a whole different...
I was going to say, let's see you do it.
Yeah.
What should people know before adopting a pet from the shelter?
I would say, do your research and be prepared for a pet. Sometimes people like the idea of getting a new puppy, but aren't aware of the reality and the amount of work and time and commitment that goes in, both the time and emotional commitment, but the financial commitment as well. So I would want people to look up that information or maybe talk to people who own pets or had a puppy. But I would want them to know for sure that the first few weeks are kind of a honeymoon period usually with those pets.
Right.
Give them time to settle in. Dogs often are on really good behavior the first few weeks, and then after that you might get to see some of their negative behaviors or maybe behaviors that didn't seem negative to the past owner, like the dog likes to jump up on people or something.
Kind of like you, dating someone for the first time.
Yeah, right.
It's like
your best show, and then oh, this is what I have now. And cats are a little bit on the opposite way, where they might be hiding and kind of reserved for the first few weeks until they really come out of their shell. So we would get animals returned for really for good reasons and some of them really odd reasons. I mean, like we just mentioned pets with upper respiratory and illness, and those are things that maybe not everybody's ready to take on. But we literally would get we'd be so happy that we had some healthy animals to adopt out, and they'd literally be returned because it's too active. The kitten was returned because it's too active. And
right.
We were so happy that we had a thriving animal to put
right.
up
like,
there on the adoption
healthy.
Floor. But the person probably just wasn't prepared for
right.
the activity that animal needs.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, another important thing is that you got to be prepared for training. Whether you get a puppy or you get an older dog, the training is going to be very important because you're going to want to train and create that bond with that animal as soon as possible. And a lot of people think they could just adopt an animal and then they can just lollygag. And you can't with a shelter animal. As I always stress to everybody, like shelter animals need 110% of veterinary care. They need 110% of behavioral care. Most of the time don't even want to know the situation they came from. And you want to create the best situation you can. And one of the first things you got to do is you got to build that bond and that relationship. It takes time.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you get that perfect animal out of the shelter.
Right. I mean, I just brought home a shelter dog on Saturday, and she started training yesterday. I talked to Ken Ramirez a couple days ago, and he was saying he really wishes people would, when they're thinking of, you know, how much money am I going to spend on a dog, how much is vet care going to cost, that they would include training in that and include training in the cost of care of owning a pet, especially these shelter guys, like you said, who come out.
And use a certified trainer, not Petco, PetSmart. Don't get me wrong. They're okay for little basic things. It's just to teach you how to do it. But an older, especially with the older animal, you need a good trainer because you need to probably break some very bad habits.
Well, and the trainers are training you. They're training you
right.
how to interact
Correct.
And how to manage
Correct.
The behaviors when they arise and how to reward the behaviors that you wish to continue.
Correct. And, you know, and also, you know, you don't want to yell at them. You want to reward good behavior,
yeah.
positive feedback.
Absolutely. Congratulations on your dog. Oh,
I don't know for the, you know, she's great. She's great. She's a Frenchie. So, you know.
Here we go.
Oh.
Yeah. We'll have lots of medical issues.
Yeah, you did look up the costs, right?
I did. She's going to be a friend for my Frenchie mix.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I just,
Got
I'm
the
all
short
in
face
at this
dogs.
Point. I do. I'm all in at this point. Has there been a breed that has really surprised you working in shelter med? One that you kind of either underestimated or was never really... was into and now you really enjoy?
It's a cat breed.
Is it?
I hated Abyssinians in practice.
Oh, yeah.
They're
yeah.
such jerks.
They're so hot-blooded.
Yeah.
Hot-blooded.
So feisty. A-holes. These cats are such jerks.
Yeah.
I would have an Abyssinian. I have clients that would have multiple Abyssinians, or they'd lose one Abyssinian and come back with another one, I would think, what is the big deal?
What are you doing?
And here I am, you know, I still remember trying to show somebody how to use the AeroCat spacer. It's an asthma treatment for an Abyssinian cat who'd had an asthmatic episode overnight and had been at the emergency hospital on oxygen. It was well enough to go home, and I was now going to demonstrate how to use this inhaler. And the cat had been so compliant because it was sick.
It couldn't breathe.
And then I said, oh, this will be no problem. In the exam room, the cat didn't like turn into a ball of fur and claws. He was more like a rolling alligator. He was he just wouldn't allow me to restrain him the way all cats allow me to restrain. So I thought, Abyssinians are awful.
Yeah.
And then
how many do you own now?
So I don't own any right now. I did get an Abyssinian from the shelter. So the story goes, I came in when I was reconnecting with the shelter after being gone for a while, and I told one of the RVTs there that I had to say goodbye to my old cat, you know, and she's like, oh, that's too bad. You should really look at the Abyssinian kitten with the broken leg. And I went, no. And I have never met a cat so clever, adorable, affectionate, like a little stinker, but you just have to laugh. I mean, this cat would steal food from your hand. He went 3 months of age with a splint on his leg. He carried a chicken carcass up the stairs with the other animals following him.
Oh, my gosh.
He would drag stuffed animals around. I called him a 10-pound Labrador because he was, he had a like that kind of personality. So the Abyssinian surprised me. I never would have gone out of my way to buy a purebred Abyssinian, but the fact that he was a shelter cat and needed a medical care kind of drew me, that and his crazy, adorable personality.
You know, I'm just blown away with all shelter animals. I also work for a rescue down in Mexico, and even the Mexican rescue dogs, it's like these dogs at the shelter are just always, somehow or another, they always seem to be like saying thank you in some way, some shape, some form. Yeah. And that's usually what the beauty is of shelter medicine. You know, all my animals have been rescues. I remember my little guy I have now, Duncan, he's like my shadow. We got him, the Laguna Beach Animal Shelter got him, and he was one huge mat. And we had to shave him from head to toe because literally when we
came off in one piece.
One piece. It looked like a little
like
Duncan.
Cruelty level matting.
It looked like a Duncan rug.
Yeah.
You know, when we're done. And he just lay there the whole time and wagged his tail. Yeah. You're like, thank you. So shelter medicine can be the most rewarding thing you could possibly do.
Are you ever surprised at how many purebred dogs end up at the shelter? Do you think it's people like misreading a breed, thinking they want a breed, know nothing about it?
I do. And I think I was mostly surprised when the huskies all started appearing back when Game of Thrones was. And I didn't, I only recently watched is it Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
I only recently, this is how terrible I am with media. I only recently watched it. I think my daughter was a baby when it came out. I had no bandwidth to be. And so I didn't understand the excitement about it and where all these huskies were coming from. And now my daughter's 12 and a half and watches videos and stuff. She thinks a husky would be a really great dog to have because she sees the cute videos of them singing and howling together. And they're adorable videos.
Right.
Until you realize that's what they do all the time. And they're little escape artists.
Right.
And they shed.
They shed. They need a lot of stimulation, a lot of attention, a lot of work to
very
do.
Very high energy.
Very, very high. Great dogs.
Yeah.
But you need to be prepared. And so we did see a lot of, I think that was what surprised me, is how many huskies, lots of Frenchies, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And many of the Frenchies all had medical conditions, skin. We'd see lots of bald Frenchies with chronic skin issues.
I don't want to date us, but when we graduated, Dalmatians.
I was going to say 101 Dalmatians.
I was wondering if you were going to say Doberman. Dalmatian,
The Dalmatians after 101 Dalmatians. Dalmatian was my first breed I ever owned on my own. They are a very, very specific breed. Like, people don't understand that Dalmatians were riding on the fire trucks, you know, when it was horse and carriage to run off the other animals. So Dalmatians don't get along with other animals.
Yeah.
And so, and also with Dalmatians, full of energy, they have that hair that has a little microscopic barb, so it gets on you and doesn't come off.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is that they need a lot of training. It's almost like a Staffordshire Terrier at that point, where they need the training a lot up front for 9 months so you have a great animal. I mean, my Dalmatian was always with me. So when we went through vet school together, she would just sit there. You would lift her head up, and she just let you pull blood. You didn't need any restraining.
Oh, my gosh.
So good.
But that was because I made the conscious effort to work and work and work and work with her.
Right.
So
Weimaraners is the other one. When you're saying Dalmatian, it reminded me of the, because people would think it was just a silver gray Labrador.
Yeah.
And so not the case.
But there is a silver Labrador that people pay a lot of money for, but there's Weimaraners somewhere in that line.
Yeah. Yeah. We had one that used to come to our clinic that was much more like a Weimaraner than a lab. And they were like, he's a silver lab. He's a silver lab. And we're like,
are you sure?
How can owners best transition a newly adopted pet into their home? Do you have any tips?
Slowly and with patience. My tips depend on whether they have resident pets already in the home. So if there's already a dog in the home, that dog is going to be should be probably the dominant dog in the relationship.
Alpha.
They're usually a little bit, there's a few few criteria that determine whether that dog's going to be the alpha. But you want to, when you're introducing your new dog, well, ideally let them meet in a neutral space. So if you can have them meet at a park or something, they're going to be in your home together soon enough. You might want to keep them on leash initially. But what I often do with two dogs where one's the new one and one's the resident one that's been there for a long time, is I make sure I give the treat first to the resident one. I let the resident one in the house, if they seem to be kind of having a little scuffle or something, so long as we're not talking about really going at it and tearing the skin, I kind of try to let it happen, because it's usually the dominant dog is expressing that this is my position to the other one, and it needs its human to support that, or else there's confusion in the household, and that's when you see constant fighting between. Did you see the same thing in practice?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is when there's a question I have for you, but getting back to what she said, so the dog that's in the house is the dog that should be fed first, should be said hello to first, should be get the leash on first, should get the collar on first, should be, you know, up on, you know, first. The second you deviate away from that, and it's very easy to do, don't get me wrong, because you have the new companion as well.
You want to treat them like like children. So, you know, your little brother, or he's a new friend, share your toys, that sort of a thing. And then you want to yell at them when they're not nice.
Exactly. Right. You just got to keep that hierarchy going. But the question I have for you is, what recommendations do you have for someone who does bring an animal home from the shelter about the quarantine?
Oh, so keeping them separate for a period of time, you mean for health reasons?
Yes.
You know, it's ideal if the new dog could be kept, or cat could be kept, separate for ideally a good week or so. I realize that that's not possible in a lot of households. It's a little easier with a cat, where you can close them into a room. Some people can do it with a dog too. I like doing it with cats, especially because the resident cats can then kind of explore, and they can kind of meet each other through the door. They know there's something in there. They get curious, and then you can let the new cat out for short monitored periods. Admittedly, some of the diseases that the most common diseases that they're going to give to each other are usually those upper respiratory ones. And if you're resident dog and you're introducing a new dog, your resident dog is a young or puppy age, I do want to make sure that they're protected against parvovirus, which is everywhere. And even though the new dog might seem very happy and healthy, I would want to give a good 5 days of separation before introducing it to a dog that may not also have a full immunity yet.
And as soon as you do get a new dog from the shelter, I do recommend dropping a fecal off at your veterinary hospital, just so they can check for intestinal parasites, Giardia being a big one of the most overlooked problems. Whether or not it truly causes intestinal signs, you don't know, but it's very contagious. And also, there is a subset of Giardia that is contagious to people. And I've had Giardia twice. It's the worst. I lost 15 pounds in 2 days.
Yeah.
It feels like someone is hitting you in the stomach with a baseball bat repeatedly.
Yeah.
So it's...
Have you had Giardia yet?
No, not that I know of.
That's really surprising working in shelter med. I'm really impressed by that.
I wash my hands a lot, I guess. I don't know. I did know, you're the second person I've known who said they've had, and it was a similar experience. It was a shelter vet who said
horrendous.
I think he thought he got it from travel, but he said he lost a lot of weight, and he was kind of proud of that, but not that way.
I had it, and I had let a puppy kiss my face, right? The number one rule, never let a puppy kiss your face in clinic.
Oh, but I mean, they're so cute.
And I remember, it was an adorable golden puppy, and I remember starting to feel awful, and then we got the fecal results in, and I was like, oh, oh no. And then.
Yeah.
Off to the races.
I have to add, while you mentioned the Giardia and you're talking about dogs kissing your face, is the other intestinal parasites that they can have. Because this is the part in, here in Southern California, dating myself also, when I first moved down, there wasn't much stress about heartworm prevention because right. we didn't really have the mosquitoes that carried it. We weren't really seeing a lot of it. But the cool thing about the heartworm preventative products is they usually also cover intestinal roundworms, which are contagious to people. It's fecal oral route, that dog that kisses your face, and it's usually small children. Because, yeah. yeah, we could almost say that in children. and I try to remind that to especially grandparents and parents that are bringing in, I don't need that heartworm prevention, and I'm watching their little one toddle around the room. Mm-hmm. This is the reason why.
And just so you know, there are all 19 species of mosquitoes now in Southern California that carry heartworm.
Right. Do you recommend people bringing their children to the shelter when picking out an animal?
I think it's kind of cool to have the children. A little backstory. When I was a kid, my mom and I used to go to the shelter in Sacramento just for funsies.
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing. That we didn't take them home. We just, right. It was like going to the zoo, only cats and
hard.
Dogs.
Oh, that's that tough. Must have been
I don't know. I think that's part of what got me into shelter medicine, is I right. just thought it was so amazing to see them. So I do think it's important to bring children to the shelter when you're considering selecting a new family member. And allowing them to participate in the process. I mean, you know, age appropriate, but right. And also prepare them before going. We right. may not leave with a pet today, or you may see a lot of pets that you like, and we want to make sure it's the right fit. Don't stick your fingers through the bars. We're going to, you know, this is the process. They'll let us visit in this controlled scenario and make sure you listen to the staff yeah. member or whomever. Just making sure that some kids get excited, they move quickly. Short story, we fostered a cat from the shelter when I worked there. It was an adult, young adult cat that it was on medications for a hip infection, so it needed about a month on antibiotics. Kept it in the house. My daughter was a toddler. She got so excited when she met this cat. I was trying to get her to kind of bring her temperature down. She was like fast movements, high-pitched voice, and the cat bit her, didn't break the skin.
Yeah.
I think the cat was just overstimulated and right. kind of, and then she was afraid of him.
Right.
Right.
And so just trying, it's for the pet's best experience, but also for your child's best experience as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any tips for people when they are selecting a pet at the shelter that you think they should stick to, or any advice that you can give someone? Like you said, when you walk in, you may not be leaving with something that day.
Yeah.
And these shelter pets are coming from all over. They're not necessarily just coming from the region you're adopting them from, right?
Right. I would go with an open mind. A lot of us think we know what kind of a dog we like. You were talking about Frenchie kind of breeds.
And, yeah.
You know, I didn't think I'd ever want an Abyssinian cat. I would focus on, you may know kind of a size-wise or roughly, but focus on the kind of personality and the kind of qualities you want the pet to have. I think personality is the biggest one, personality and training. They're going to come out. You want a dog that when you visit with it, it gives you attention and right. is curious about you. They out of their kennel, they might sniff around the visiting area a little bit for a moment, but they should be motivated to come to you. That's going to be a dog that is going to be one that wants to keep you happy, wants to respond to your commands when you work with them in those initial training sessions,
yeah.
Wants to bring the ball to you. And is respecting you. That's usually the best setup. Cats, oh my gosh, cats are all over the place.
Yeah.
I like the ones that are pawing outside of the cage and screaming at me, but you may end up with a screamer at home too.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I mean, you can't go in, like she said, with, I'm looking for blank.
Right.
My wife and I went to the shelter. We're thinking we wanted a small little Yorkie or something like that, and we left with the Great Pyrenees. That just happens because you never know what's going to attract your heart. For most people, the great majority of people that go to shelter, there's going to be 100 that attract your heart if they have 100 animals there. You also have to be realistic. If you live in a small apartment, I can understand if you're, let's say, a single female and you want that big dog to take running and just for protection. That's great, but that small apartment's not a great environment for them.
Right.
They'll go crazy. Also, if you can kind of figure out what the breed is, you know, if you're like, I'm not home for like 8-9 hours a day,
right.
don't get a working breed.
Right.
They'll go crazy. They need exercise. They need to be stimulated. So you just have to kind of know, but you never know when you go into a shelter what you're going to see.
Yeah. I think a big misconception, too, that's out there, you know, is like a kill shelter versus a no-kill shelter. And I'm sure being in shelter med, mm-hmm. people love to get fired up and get you going about it. But how important is spaying and neutering your pets?
It's absolutely critical. It's absolutely critical. And I like to remind, in private practice, I have the luxury of being able to tell people the reasons for their individual pet, the right. health reasons. When people realize it's not just about your perfect pet having puppies or kittens, it's also about their own health and the types of infections and diseases and cancers they can get when unaltered. But holy cow, there are so many unwanted animals in the shelters. There's more than enough to choose from out there. I understand accidental things happen, but get them spayed and neutered and get. I recommend early. I'm a shelter vet. I know there's a lot of different criteria that have come out there on maybe delaying for certain breeds or for certain conditions, but for me, I also wouldn't want a dog that I have to diaper around the house or any of those things either. I know what I can tolerate as a pet owner, and I like them spayed early.
Well, I mean, the late spay neuter, that's the new hotbed topic. You know, we had Dr. Gassel on here that's basically said, hey, hip dysplasia is a genetic condition. So whether you spay them early or late, they're already bred and have that in them. You know, I would always look as a general practitioner at their situation. If they have a boy, you don't really, as long as they're not showing behavioral issues, and by the
lifting
time
their leg everywhere.
Yeah, well, or being aggressive or on the food bowl, stuff like that. But usually even then it's too late. Even if you neuter them, you can't get rid of the behavioral issues. But I would look at if it was a husband and wife or a couple that came in and they have three young kids, I just look them in the eye and say, do you want to diaper your dog? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay, let's do it at 7 months.
Yeah. When boy cats, I'm going to say, I want to neuter them nice and early before any spraying behaviors develop. Right. Because I was in college when my backpack got sprayed by somebody's cat that I was pet sitting. And oh my gosh.
Unneutered male cat.
Yes. Urine is just awful.
Yeah.
So you were in shelter med during the pandemic. So you've seen the pendulum swing both ways, right? You've seen the shelter almost completely empty, and then you've seen it above capacity.
Right.
Do you think there's any way to kind of stay in the middle?
That's the million dollar question, right? The ways to stay in the middle or to help stay in the middle, when I first started in shelter medicine, shortly after I graduated, I started working in the shelters. But around 2010, and certainly in the last 5 or 10 years, the shelter industry has really blossomed with expert information to help with that situation. It depends on each region and each area, but the ways to do it are spaying and neutering, and we're talking about community. When I first started in shelter medicine, we all just focused on the animals in our care. There was no outreach into the community.
Right.
So that's where shelters are succeeding now, is that they're interacting with the community. They have fosters that take animals. They have rescues that'll take many of the animals that need a little bit longer to convalesce from something, or maybe more medical care than the shelter has resources for. So using your community, but also using the community to offer more spay-neuter options.
Right.
They're already required to be spayed and neutered before they can leave the shelter, but the ones in the community that are out there also need access. So spaying and neutering outside of the shelter, and then helping decrease the number of pets coming into the shelter. And part of that happens at the veterinary hospital.
Correct.
And supporting the human-animal bond. So the animals come into the shelter when that bond is strained or broken. You know, Dr. G talks about the couple that adopts the dog or the cat. When the new dog keeps peeing in the wrong or pooping in the wrong spot, and the wife loves the dog, or the husband says, I can't take this anymore, and now the couple is fighting all the time, sometimes that's the compromise, is the animal ends up in the shelter. So,
yeah, it's awful. It's yeah. We know when they're giving up an animal, most of the time it's not an easy decision.
Right.
And then there's a lot of strain within the family. But I guess the trick is to educate the public better. Training. Pet insurance.
Yes.
My next question is literally about pet insurance. Yeah.
And because the cost of care of veterinary medicine is a little crazy right now.
Yeah. Well, and getting care, that's part of it, is going into the vet before it turns into a big problem. Because most of us, we adopt this wait and see approach. We all do it. I've had that cough. If I still have the cough next week, maybe I'll make
it. We always
just wait until we're on, till we're really sick before we. But we also know how we feel. Animals are expert at hiding their symptoms until they reach some threshold beyond which they just can't hide it anymore.
Right.
And at that time, it's going to be much more costly, might be hard to get them back to their original state, the healthy state that you're looking for, all because you were waiting and seeing, or maybe you wanted to avoid the cost and hoping it would go away or improve on its own.
Yeah.
Paying a couple hundred in prevention is saving you thousands in the future.
Yeah.